Hi everyone, I'm Adam Johnson. I'm a dad and a rare disease patient advocate, a self-proclaimed dadvocate. From the onset of symptoms and even after an eventual diagnosis, the isolation was almost as excruciating as the symptoms themselves. I felt so alone in so many ways. One of the most prominent ways in particular was as a parent. I knew I couldn't be the only person with a rare disease who was also trying to raise children, but it sure felt like I was. As I've learned, when there's not a specific community you're looking for, one that you need, sometimes you just have to make it yourself. It's taken a while, but I finally decided to do just that. And here we are. This is Parents is Rare, a series brought to you by Energy in Action. Living life as a parent with a rare disease can be quite paradoxical. We laugh and cry, we're vulnerable and scared, we're brave and afraid, all at the same time. Parents is Rare is a community where parents like me who have a rare disease or chronic illness can connect, share, support, and be supported. Hi everyone. Welcome to the inaugural edition of Parents is Rare. I'm your host, Adam Johnson. As you may know, I'm a dad who was diagnosed with a rare disease just about 2 years ago now. One of the most difficult things for me, and there are many, was thinking about all the ways my children would be impacted. How would things change for them? Would this be a traumatic experience? How would their feelings, physical health, and emotions be impacted? And would they remember the person that I was before all of this? There's a lot at play here, and it's incredibly emotional. We'll dig into many of these concerns and get perspective from other parents in a similar situation in future episodes. Today, as we begin the Parents is Rare series, I decided to see if my kiddos would help me with the first episode. Both were willing, even after me repeatedly asking if they were sure, and after many conversations. And to be honest, they've probably got more of a future in this than I do. They carried me through this episode, just as they do through so many other tough days. I'm sure we didn't get too in-depth with many of the difficult truths that come with the territory, but I'm incredibly proud of them both for sharing some of their thoughts and feelings. Together, we hope it's helpful for other families that may be in a similar situation. With that, here's my conversation with my 11-year-old daughter, Emma, and a little snippet from my son, Spencer, and his 5-year-old point of view. Hi, Emma.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on with me.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You're the very first guest on the Parents is Rare podcast series. What do you think about that?
I'm special.
You are very special. Yes, I love it. It's very exciting news.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for doing this. I really appreciate it. It is something that is not necessarily very easy to talk about, but it's really important. And I'm hopeful that it's very helpful for you. It's helpful for me. I know it is. And I hope that it'll be helpful for other people as well that might be listening to us have our conversation today.
Mm-hmm. I hope it will too.
Well, let's jump in and we'll just kind of talk a little bit about what it's like for me to be a parent that has a rare disease and a little bit about what it's like for you to be a child who has a parent who has a rare disease. And that's kind of the whole point and the whole premise of the podcast series that I'm starting. I'm hoping to develop some sense of community and let other people out there that are in similar situations know that they're not alone. So Emma, when you were about 10 years old is when I got my diagnosis of mitochondrial disease. What do you remember about that whole process?
When it first happened, I don't remember a whole ton. All I remember is not knowing how to like say it or spell it because it's like a longer word and stuff. But all I really knew was that it was a, some kind of muscle disease. And that's all really like you knew or your doctors knew. So anybody really knew. And then like as time went on, more information was found for you, for like your doctors and stuff about it. So you could like learn more about it and stuff. But I don't remember like the day you told me that. I don't like remember that day specifically or whatever.
Yeah, that's interesting because I very specifically remember the exact day and the time and where we were when I told you and your little brother about it. We were sitting at the kitchen table and we started off the conversation just by talking a little bit about how you know, you both knew, you know, that I'd been sick and that I hadn't been feeling well. I also don't know if you remember, Emma, I used to travel a lot for work. I used to travel around and teach teachers all over the country. And that's what I was doing when my symptoms really started. And I was gone a lot throughout the week, but I was home on, you know, a couple of days and then the weekends. And then as my symptoms flared up, that's when I started to not travel quite as much. And I don't know if you remember that transition for me either. And it was tough because we didn't really talk a whole lot about what was going on, but I always kind of figured that you knew that things were changing, that things were a little bit different because of the way we would just kind of explain to you, hey, Dad's not feeling as well, or he needs some time to rest, or, you know, he has another appointment that's coming up. Do you remember any of those things?
I do remember when you didn't start to travel as much and you were like home more, but I don't remember as much as like you used to travel like all the time. I just remember that you were like home more than like in your office or whatever.
Yeah.
You were like either home or like at a doctor's appointment or something. And I remember how Graham or Grandma would come over and like watch me or Spencer more often than normal.
Yeah, there were a few times we had to go to different places in different states to go see different doctors. Mm-hmm. So then when we finally figured out what was going on and I got my diagnosis, like I said, I remember being at the kitchen table and telling you and Spencer, and you were both just kind of nodding and like, yeah, okay. And there wasn't a whole lot of conversation that went around with it. That was a really hard thing for me to do, was to tell you both about what was going on and that we finally figured things out. On one hand, I was thankful because I knew what was going on. And on the other hand, I was kind of like you, like, Mito, what? You know, how do you spell that? What does that mean? Like you said, a couple big words, right? It'd be good for Scrabble.
Yeah, earn you lots of points. When I figure out how to spell it.
Yes, I know, right? That's the first step. I think that one of the hardest things for me after that point was that I didn't really know what else to do or what else to say. But I thought from my point of view, looking at you and Spencer, because you would have been 10 and he would have been 3 at that time. And I didn't want to give you too much information. I didn't want to talk too much about it. I wanted to let you have some time to process it. Mm-hmm. And to think about it and to figure out what all this meant. And I didn't want to push it a little bit further. You know, I wanted to let you take some time to kind of figure it out. And I waited for you a little bit to come back to me. Do you remember the first time you kind of came to me and talked about it?
I think it was in fourth grade when we were doing a project, the human body, and we got to pick a body part and I did muscles. And then I asked you, like, do you have anything about this disease? Like, because I know it's about muscles, but like, that's all.
Yeah, I remember that as well. And you also came back to me and asked, hey, can I do this project on muscles and mitochondria? And that ended up being where you settled in with your teacher on doing your presentation, your research. You talked a lot about mitochondria. That for me, when you came back to me, it was my cue or my clue as a dad. And as you know, I used to be a teacher, right? So I was looking for that little clue from my child or my student. And I was like, okay, this is the time now. She's ready to talk a little bit more about it. She wants to learn more about it. In my mind, I felt like that was your way of telling me you were ready.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that at all?
I do, because there wasn't a time when I was like, oh, I really wanted to learn about it. Like, I didn't really want to sit down and like learn all these facts at the time, because it was just like not on my mind. It was kind of just like, what is it? Like, what does it mean? Like, and so when the project came to me, I was like, oh, now would be a good time to learn more about it, you know, because I just thought that would be a good time to do it. I had something to like do with the information and stuff besides keeping it in my head. Like, I could share it with other people.
Yeah, and being able to share things with other people can be so helpful sometimes, for me at least. I know that that is one thing that I really look forward to and enjoy, is when I can share with other people.
Yeah.
So from my perspective, when you came to me and told me you were going to do that, I had two big feelings with that, Emma. The first feeling that I had was I was really proud of you. I was like, wow, this is amazing. She wants to learn a little bit more about this, but she also wants to do that so she can teach other people about mitochondrial disease and share a little bit with them about what's going on for me. And I was really proud of you for doing that, because that takes a lot for you to do that, to recognize it, to jump in and to do it. And I also was really hopeful that it would be helpful for you as well. And the second feeling that I had was I was sad, not because of you. and not because of what you chose to do with the information. I was sad that you had to do that because I have the disease. What kind of feelings did you have?
Well, when you first told me, I was kind of like, what does it mean and stuff. After I figured that out, I was like, oh, so like this makes him feel like this, or he gets tired a lot, or some just different things like that. Like, oh, kind of like understanding what it is. And I'm kind of happy that it happened at the age that I'm at and not as a 3-year-old, because then I can kind of like understand more about what it is than just be like, it's some long word or whatever, you know? And I feel, so I was kind of like happy almost that I wasn't super, super young. And I'm like, meta whata, because I can like say it or didn't understand what it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you have any advice for other kids that are in a similar situation where their parent gets diagnosed with a rare disease or some kind of a chronic illness? What would you say to other kids that are in that situation? If you could kind of give them any advice or suggestions.
I would say to, when you're ready to learn more about it, so you can do what you can to help your parents or to help other people, or just to know what it is. So you're not just like, oh yeah, my dad has this disease. What is it? I have no idea. So you kind of know about it. And if like for you, you can't like, for example, play baseball or whatever, but instead you can do like other things like watching TV show together or playing a game together. So just because you can't do the same things, you can still do other things that are fun.
I love that. Yeah, that's fantastic. And that's, yeah, different things, right? Like you and I used to do all sorts of things together that involved being really active. Do you remember any of those things that we used to do together before I had my diagnosis?
I remember we used to play baseball a lot. We used to go swimming. Oh, we used to play tennis sometimes too. I'm just going to give you a little advice that when your dad's a tennis coach and you aren't, he gives you a lot of pointers.
Yes. Maybe too many pointers. Is that what I'm picking up here?
Maybe.
For those of you that are just listening here, I'm getting the raised eyebrows from Emma across the house here. Yeah. I remember doing all sorts of those things too. We used to do bowling quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my favorite things that we used to do was daddy-daughter trips.
Yeah.
We used to do those a couple of different times where we got to go and watch our Cubs play some baseball, right?
Yeah.
Those were really fun times. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of emotions that come up with me about that now as well. I know we're in a pandemic, so it's a different time right now, but I miss those things too. I miss those chances that we used to have to go and just be the two of us. Not that we can't do that again, right? I think we could. You're so wonderful at helping me and taking care of me that I think that we could make it work. We're a pretty dynamic duo.
Yes.
It's just different now, right? So how do you feel about those things that are different now? Like the activities that we used to do, we can't do those anymore, but we do different things. Or when we do travel or go somewhere, it looks different now. How does that impact you?
I mean, it's not like, oh, darn it, we get to go on vacation, but we can't do this. It's like, oh yeah, we get to go on vacation and we get to do this instead or whatever. Like, when we went to San Diego, you had your scooter with you. And so we got to board the plane first, and that was like nice. And so there are like advantages to it. And then there's also stuff that like bummer, but still you have other things to look forward to instead of looking at, oh, dang it, we can't do this. So I think there's that. And then you have to think of the positives. There's different things that you can do. And like right now, I think that really helped me to learn that not everything you plan for or do is going to always stay the same, because it's not. And so this was a really good lesson. Like, you're not always going to have things the way that you want or that you wish. It's going to just go, and you have to go with it and just learn as you go.
Man, absolutely. How old are you again?
11.
That's right. I love the wisdom from my 11-year-old daughter. Almost 12. You're almost 12.
Almost.
I like it. That's fantastic, Emma. I mean, it's a wonderful perspective to have. For me, I think it's really important to recognize that things are challenging. Things are tough. We wouldn't necessarily choose for things to go this way, right? If we could just say, nope, we're not doing that. No mitochondrial disease, right? We would obviously choose that, but we can't. And we are in this situation now. And there is something to be said for trying to kind of make the best of it.
Yeah.
It's not a wonderful situation, but it's a situation that we're in. And instead of kind of, you know, sitting around and maybe feeling sorry for ourselves the whole time, all the time, we try to make the best of the situations that we have now.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing to do.
Yeah.
I always try to find the balance with that, Emma, because I want to make sure that it's okay for us to feel those feelings. It's okay to be sad. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be mad. It's okay to be frustrated, right, about the situation. And when we feel those things, we need to let ourselves feel them. And then we also need to continue on, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I love your piece of advice that you gave there, though, for other kids that are in a similar situation, to find other things that you can do. One of my favorite things is to watch the show Making It with you.
Yes, that is very fun.
Yeah, we didn't really used to do a whole lot of that type of thing together, but I've enjoyed that a lot.
There's like different jokes you can make and stuff with what you're doing instead of what you used to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Emma, I was wondering a little bit more about some of those feelings that I was talking about. When you did your presentation, when you did your research and went and stood in front of your class and in fourth grade and told them about my disease and were teaching them about mitochondria and muscles, how was that for you as an experience?
I think I was nervous more than anything. I mean, I'm always nervous when I like do a presentation or something. But I think I was more nervous that way because, like, it was just different than what I would normally do for, like, a presentation or something. And it was also, like, cool almost because I got to share something that nobody else there has ever heard of or knew what it was or anything. So I was, like, teaching them. But at the same time, it was, like, weird because I'm showing them this stuff and they're, like, what is that? You know, like, they're not getting it right away or whatever. And so there were good parts about it, but also challenging parts about it. Everybody reacted differently about it. I was like hoping they would not exactly like understand, but like get what I was trying to teach them or show them, because it wasn't like directly on the lines of muscles. It was more about mitochondria.
Yeah. And I'm super proud of you for doing that. I know that for me, one of the feelings that I had when I first was diagnosed with the disease was I felt like I was the only parent out there that was dealing with a diagnosis like this, that was dealing with symptoms like this. I have a rare disease. I don't know anybody else that has a rare disease and is also trying to be a parent at the same time. Do you know any other kids that have parents that have a rare disease?
I don't. And that's kind of what I also thought when I first got this. I was like, oh, wow, I'm the only person with a dad who has this disease or who has a disease. And then more and more as you got into this in like the rare disease community, I learned that I wasn't the only one. And there were other people going through something similar to me or our family.
Yeah, I agree. And it was really helpful for me when I found that. Because when I was talking a little bit about, you know, what I was going through to my friends that are, you know, here or elsewhere that didn't connect in that way, they don't have that same experience. It was good. I was glad that I was able to share with them. And it was also a challenge. It was also really difficult mm-hmm. for me. But when we did find other folks in the community, and while I'm doing this Parents is Rare podcast in hopes of trying to reach out to others to let them know that they aren't alone, I think that's a really important thing. And I love how you're doing that from the side as a kid as well. You're doing some amazing things that are really helpful for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Now, can I ask you a question?
Ooh, yeah. Okay. How the tables turn here. I like it.
Okay. So my first question for you was it harder for you to tell people about your disease or to get told you had the disease?
Oof. You're bringing the heavy hitting questions first. I like it. Maybe you should have your own podcast. I think that could go well. Boy, that's a great question, Emma. They were both hard. If I have to choose one that's the hardest, it would be telling other people. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was harder for me to tell other people because I don't like to cause any kind of trouble or angst for anybody else. And I don't want other people to have to feel any sadness or I want other people to be happy. I want other people to be feeling good. And I didn't want to be like the bearer of bad news for that situation.
for example, like you and your mom and your brother to be sad or scared. So I think that was the hardest part for me. It was really hard to hear the doctor say it, but I, like you said, first time you heard it, it was kind of like, wait, what is this? What's happening? I don't understand this. What's going on? Why is this happening? Type of a thing.
Yeah.
And then to have to tell that to other people was probably harder for me.
Okay. My next question for you is, how does it feel for you as a dad? Because for me, it felt like weird almost. But for you, being a dad with having to manage like having your disease and then also being a parent, how does it feel for you?
I will answer your question, Emma. But can you talk a little bit more about the weird feeling that you had as well? And then I promise I'll come back to it.
Are you sure? Are you just avoiding it?
I'm not avoiding it. I'll come back to it.
Okay. It was kind of strange because you would normally always be the one taking care of me or Spencer or somebody. And then in this moment, it was like, oh, I have to start taking care of you or helping you more than when you would help me. So it was almost like we changed positions or something where I was helping you. And then it was also kind of like weird to watch you like have to do these different things than like what you used to do or whatever, like have to take naps, which everybody loves, but like have to take them more often, or even if you don't want to, you still have to. Like, you aren't always getting your energy all at once or whatever, and so you have to take that time and rest when you used to just like sleep at night, and now you're like, oh, I'm going to take a nap now and then we can do this later or whatever. So like making more time for you was kind of different because normally you wouldn't go and rest or have to go to a doctor's appointment or whatever.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing that. That's, I know it's hard. These are tough conversations and I love how open and honest you are about these things. It's really helpful for me to know what you're going through. And I always love it when we can have our conversations and our talks about these things. So back to the question that you asked, and thanks for clarifying that and talking a little bit about it. I would agree with you. It's weird. It's different. It's odd. I didn't really know how to handle it. And for me as a dad, like, you know, exactly like you said, I'm used to being the one who kind of helps out and takes care of things. And I used to be on the go all the time. I don't know if you remember it, but I mean, from the time you were little, I was in the classroom, I was teaching elementary school kids, and then I would coach after school. After coaching, I would go to the college and teach my graduate school students. And then I would, you know, come home and we would be busy on the weekends. We'd cram everything in and have all sorts of time to play and hang out. And I would still try to really do my best to be a dad. And that hasn't changed. I'm still trying to do my best to be a dad and to be a good dad for you and your brother. But it is weird. It is difficult. It's challenging. I don't like it sometimes, Emma. I really don't. But I also know that, again, this is the situation that we're in, and I'm going to try to do my best with it. I would say the hardest thing that I have for this is just missing the way that things were.
Yeah.
For me, the way things unfolded, I know what it was like before. I know what it was like at the time and right before I started having symptoms. And I know what it's like now, and it's just different.
Yeah.
And I can still be thankful. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still thankful that I'm here. I'm still thankful that I can be with you guys. I'm still thankful that I can have conversations with you and find these different activities that we like to do together.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard. What do you think about all that?
I know that you were telling me the other day how that, like, for Spencer, he doesn't really remember when he was like 1 year old and we were going to baseball games and stuff. He only really remembers you as like having to rest sometimes or not being able to like run the bases when you're playing baseball or something. But then for me, it's kind of cool how I got to almost see like both sides of it, because it was just different. And it wasn't like the whole time you were having to rest at some points or whatever. Like, I don't know. It was just like different almost.
Yeah, it really is, for sure. And, you know, the other thing is, I'm, you know, on our daddy daughter trips, I remember, you know, we've gone to San Diego and Seattle and watched some baseball games together. And, you know, we know what it was like to be able to go that first trip that we had. And we went to the zoo and then we went to the playground and we go to the restaurants and get food and go to the game and go to the swimming pool. And we would just go, 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 go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much fun. And I'm really glad that we got to have those experiences And then the last trip that we had all together, it was different because, like you said, I had to build in, you know, times to rest. Hey, we're going to do this in the morning, and then I got to come back because I got to rest. And if I don't rest, it's just going to be bad news for me and for my symptoms. And then it won't be quite as fun for everybody else as well. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard thing too, because I know that that impacts you and your brother and your mom. And I don't like to be a cause of, you know, disruption or changing things around a little bit for you. I don't like that. And I am also really thankful that you all are understanding and helpful, and that, like you said, you can kind of step in and help me in certain ways. It really means a lot to me, and it touches my heart. Did you have another question for me, or can I ask you what the hardest part is for you?
Oh, you can go ahead.
I'm going to flip that question back to you then. What's the hardest part for you, Emma?
I think it's kind of the same as you, how like we can't always do what we used to do. It's different, and we have to do different things, and we have to take time for you to rest, and we have to, like, we can't just, like you said, go do this and then that and then do this after and then do something else after that or whatever. You have to do, like, okay, we're going to do this now, then you can rest, then we'll do this and then this or whatever. How you have to make time for you to rest, which, like I've been saying the whole time, it's like it's just different side of you almost, where you have to rest and stuff instead of just being able to do this and then that and then that and then something else or whatever.
Yeah. And it's a challenge. And I think another hard part for me was having to use like a scooter to get around. When we went to Disneyland a couple years ago, right after I had my diagnosis and we were trying to get around and go places and see things, that when we first started thinking about it, and my doctor was like, look, in order to kind of preserve your energy, you're going to have to use a wheelchair in the airport. You're going to have to use a scooter to get around. And I was like, psh, I'm not doing that. You know, yeah. I don't want to do that. I'm young. I don't need to go out and do those things. I'm not used to it. Right. It was just such a big change for me. You know, I had a cane that I had to use to help me stabilize. And even looking forward to now, I've got my leg brace and my breathing machine. Like, there's a lot of different things that make it really hard. And I think that one thing, though, that we did find was there was a little bit of an advantage to having my scooter at Disneyland. I know that was one of your favorite things.
Yeah, getting to cut the lines.
Yeah, sometimes we could go and get into the lines with our passes to kind of scoot up in front there a little bit.
Yeah.
Again, it's not something that I would want to do, but you know, it's the situation that we're in, and we're going to try to make the best out of it. Mm-hmm. Right. So when I am using my scooter or kind of hobbling around with my cane or my leg brace and we're out in public, is that hard for you?
It can be, because it's different. Like, we have to use an elevator instead of the stairs or whatever, but it also is almost like nice how like your other scooter that we had at Disneyland had like the basket that you could put things in, and so it could help so you didn't have to hold everything or whatever. So there are definitely advantages to having it. Yesterday when we were at the mall, you were on your scooter and you were just speeding ahead, and we had to like run to catch up with you. So when you're using your scooter, you can be like faster than when you're using your cane, and you have to go slower and it takes up more energy. It also takes up like more, almost like more room, like when you're going around or in the car or wherever, but at least you have it. And so you're not like, we can only go to one store because by the time we're done with that, I'll be out of energy. It's like, we can go to a few stores because I can use my scooter and we can go like faster to get places and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to have, because I was apprehensive at first. I didn't like it. I didn't like spending the money to get it. I didn't like going through all the effort and energy to get it, but it's necessary, and it helps me save my spoons, save my energy, right?
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you understand and appreciate that. It is one thing that I think about though sometimes, Emma. So yesterday we had Emma's little birthday celebration where she got to go with a friend to the mall. We all put our masks on and we're kind of cruising through the mall a little bit. And Emma was having some fun there. And I was a little bit nervous about it, just because that was kind of the first time since we've been in this pandemic phase here, right? That was kind of the first time that we'd been out with one of your friends. And I was a little nervous about that. I was hoping that I wasn't embarrassing you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you weren't.
Well, that's good. And I also felt bad one time when we were coming out the doors and I was like, hey, Emma, can you grab the door? And you grabbed the door, and then your friend was behind you and you thought she was going to grab it, and I almost ran over her. That was bad.
Yeah.
All right, I took over a little bit there. Back to you if you have any other questions for me.
Okay, so I have two more for you. The first one is, what is one pro of like having your disease? What is one thing that you not are like looking forward to, but that is like, that you're like, oh, so we get to do this or whatever?
Ooh, yeah. Well, I would say, I guess one positive thing that I've really taken from this is there is just this wonderful community that's out there that is there to support each other, to support other people that are going through a similar situation, whether that's, you know, parents that have kids that have a rare disease, or kids that have parents that have a rare disease, or other family interactions, or people that know other people or caregivers in the community. I think that's been one wonderful thing that I didn't anticipate coming into this, because for that first year or so, Emma, I felt so alone. It was so hard. One of the most difficult things that I've been through, because I lost so much, right? Like, I lost this job that I loved, and I had just gotten a promotion, and I had my team, and I loved the work that I was doing. I lost a lot of friendships that I developed. I lost that ability to kind of travel and go and see places and do things. And I was hoping to make a difference for students and teachers across the country. And there was so much loss, and I didn't know that I would ever find something like that again. And now that I am into the rare disease space, that I'm starting to, you know, advocate a little bit more, I'm putting myself out there by my website or my blog, on Twitter, and now on the podcast here, I think that that's one incredibly big positive that I didn't anticipate coming. I think our friend Effie talks about, you know, it's not necessarily a club that you would want to join, but once you're in it, it's one of the best things ever because of the community and how supportive and helpful it is.
All right. So now I want to know one like con, one thing that you don't like about it besides like having it. You don't love having it, but you have it. What is one other thing that you're like, oh, darn it, I can't do this or whatever?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me, Emma, that I miss is being able to do the things that, you know, I want to do with you and your brother. I want to be able to go run with you. I want to be able to play tag. I want to be able to climb on the playground equipment with you. I want to be able to kick a soccer ball, throw a baseball, run the bases. I want to be able to fill a day with you nonstop from start to finish and just say, hey, Emma, whatever you want to do today, let's do it. We're going to do it. And we're going to do it all. I want to be able to do that. That is the hardest thing for me, is not being able to do those things anymore. And it's incredibly challenging. It's incredibly difficult. And I do not like it.
All right. And then my last question for you. So you had your disease and you didn't really know who to go to, like who could help you besides your doctors. And so once you found MedoAction, what did that feel for you? Like, how did you feel after you found that and started like talking with them and like working with them?
It was interesting because when I first found, I just Googled, you know, mitochondrial disease, support, help, like, how do I do this? And I found MitoAction's website, and they had this support call on Fridays, and I still do it. You know, I still do that one every Friday.
Yeah.
And I called into that the first time, and I was scared. I was like, oh my gosh, what's happening? What do I do? Who are these people? Right? Like, what do I say? What do I do? And I just kind of jumped in, and luckily for me that day, I was kind of one of the only patients on. There was some staff from MitoAction, and they're all fabulous. You know them now from the work that you're doing to support through another helping. But, you know, it was really difficult, and I just kind of let it all out. You know, like, hey, I'm going through this stuff. I can't believe it. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. I don't know what the resources are. And to have them be able to understand what I was going through and provide me with some resources, and to have them be able to be a support for me in that way, meant the world. It was so wonderful and so great. And that was the only real line of support from a disease-specific standpoint at that point in time, Emma, that I had. And I couldn't have been more thankful. That was before I found the rare disease community and all that. That was the very first thing that I did. It made all the difference for me. And I would say that to other parents that are going through these situations, if there is an area that, you know, that is already there for a support for your rare disease, where the things that you're going through, jump in, give it a try, give them a call, reach out. And if there's not, you know, reach out to me or to someone else in the community. We're always here and able to talk, because that makes such a big difference And yeah, and so for me, Emma MitoAction has been absolutely wonderful. And now we've got all these great partnerships with them to try to help move things forward for the community.
Yes, I would agree. MitoAction team, they're amazing. They're super nice. And they are always there to help you if you need it.
Yes, for sure.
All right, I just thought of one more question.
Ooh, all right.
So you asked me advice to give to kids with parents who have mitochondrial disease. Now, what would your advice be to parents with mitochondrial disease?
Well, my advice to parents with a mitochondrial disease or a rare disease in general is to really allow yourself the opportunity to feel all the feelings that come with it and don't invalidate those, right? Like give yourself and your feelings the time and the space that they need, because there's a lot that goes with it.
Yeah.
That would be the first thing. Give yourself like permission to feel, as this book that I've read by Dr. Mark Brackett, and it's fabulous, Permission to Feel. And I would say to give yourself that and to give it to others, right? So for me, one important thing is to make sure that I'm trying and I do my best, Emma. I don't know how it feels from your standpoint, but I try to give you and your brother and your mom and everybody else the permission to feel too, right? Like, hey, it's okay to feel these feelings. It's okay to go through this stuff. It's all right to have them. It's good to talk about it. So I would say those are some good first steps. What do you think?
I agree. Those are great things to start and do, and they would all help.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would also say find community, reach out. And if there's not a community there, make it. You know, that's one thing that I've really learned. It's some important things that some folks that I know and love in the community have taught me. And I would say that could be a next step there.
Yeah. If you don't have a community, you can start one.
Yeah, absolutely. You can start one. And you kind of did that too, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit? We talked about your fourth grade experience and the presentations that happened. Then how did you kind of use that to move things forward for what you're doing when you got to fifth grade?
Funny enough, fifth grade started, my teacher gave me the idea to start, well, not start Another Helping, but gave me the idea to help people. So I decided to start Another Helping.
Yeah, she called it like a passion project, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just kind of picked one thing that I wanted to do or liked to do, and I made it happen. And that thing was helping people with mitochondrial diseases, whether they were a parent or a kid or just somebody out there who knows somebody or who is a family member to somebody, just helping them. So I started Another Helping, where I raised money for those people through a bunch of different programs with MitoAction, and that MitoAction has. Right now we're raising awareness for education, advocacy, and awareness just to help with that. And then in November, in December, I'm going to raise money for kids with mitochondrial diseases so that they can get Christmas presents, which is called Meta Santa. So there's just so many different ways that people can raise money. And this is just mine.
Yeah. And it's fantastic. I love it, Emma. That's one of the, you know, I mean, I've got millions of reasons to be proud of you. And that's one of them that are very high up on my list. It shows that you're very compassionate and empathetic. And, you know, you talked about how you saw a lot of the things that I go through and the things that I deal with and the things that I need to help me just get by on a daily basis. And you wanted to help others with those needs that they might have as well. It's incredibly encouraging for me as a parent and as an adult, just a human in the world. It gives me great hope for the future, knowing that there's wonderful leaders like you who are out there raising awareness and finding a cause that means something to them and doing something with it and about it. It's been so wonderful to see how far you've come. Where can people find out more about Another Helping, Emma?
AnotherHelping@MitoAction.org.
Great. So that's your email address, is AnotherHelping@MitoAction.org. So we can go to MitoAction.org/AnotherHelping to check out your website. We can follow you on Instagram and Twitter at @BakeForMito. And you can also find some other podcasts that you've been on. I think you've got a couple more lined up, so it's going to be fantastic. Well, Emma, any last thoughts or anything that you might have before we wrap up here? Anything else that you'd want to share with our audience, anybody that might come across our podcast episode here?
If you have a rare disease and you're just coming into the rare disease community, make sure you find people who have a similar disease to you or start your own community and learn that there are ups and downs to every disease in every situation.
Fantastic. Couldn't agree more. Last question that I have for you, Emma. What worries do you have? Do you have any worries that go along with this as you see me kind of navigate my way through my rare disease?
I always worry that it's going to get like worse, but I guess I've learned not to think like that because like it could get worse one day and then better the next. Or like you're going to feel like there's some days where you don't sleep that well at night and so you don't feel as good during the day, but then you feel better the next day or something. And so that would be really my only one.
Yeah, I agree. And I have that too. I go through some of the same thoughts and same processes sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, Emma, this has been wonderful. I sure appreciate you and all the work that you're doing. I'm grateful to be able to be your dad and to have you as a daughter. I couldn't be more proud of you. Love you so much. Keep doing the awesome things that you're doing. And maybe we can chat on a podcast or maybe I'll see you somewhere around the house here a little later.
Maybe so. Maybe I'll hide from you.
Hi, Spencer.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Good. It's good to see you. Look at this. We're in the same house at the same time, and we're looking at each other on the computer. That's kind of silly, isn't it? Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on to talk with me a little bit about my mitochondrial disease. I just talked with your sister, Emma, a little bit, and we were sharing together some thoughts about how it is to have a dad that has a disease like this. Can you tell us a little bit about how it feels for you?
Like, you can't do what I can do. Like, you can't really, like, run when I can. And, like, when I could jump from one place to the other and you couldn't. And you couldn't, like, do hopscotch because you have to do only one foot and then two foot. One foot.
Do you have any favorite things that you get to do with me still?
Like, we can throw the football.
Yeah, I like to throw the football too. I can kind of sit on the floor and toss the ball to you while you toss it back to me. That's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And also, you can kind of like quickly throw me to try to get me out when we're playing baseball. You can try to throw it really fast.
Yeah, those are some fun things, huh? I know that we got a Wii, too. We can do some Wii sports sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Mario, yeah. So, Spencer, what would you tell any other parents or kids that have maybe a dad or a mom that has a rare disease? Do you have anything to say to those people? No, not so much. Can you talk a little bit about what Emma does for another helping and how she helps other people and other families with mitochondrial disease?
Like, she can make cupcakes for them if they're sick
Yeah.
or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's wonderful too. Did you get to help her with her cupcakes that she made that we took to the hospital last week?
Yes.
What did you do?
Putting on the boxes and giving them. She puts on stickers and then I put them back. That's what I helped about cupcakes. And I taste the frosting to make sure it's a lot good for the real people that are going to eat it.
You know what, Spencer? I think that's one of the most important jobs that there is. Yeah. And it's my favorite job too. I'm really glad that you could do that. Emma makes a delicious cupcake, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She sure does. Yes. Hey, Spencer, well, I know that it's kind of hard sometimes because daddy has his leg brace. Daddy has like his breathing machine. Daddy has his scooter. Are there any kind of cool things or fun things that go along with that you like?
Yeah. To like walk beside you and we get to ride and then we get to like go find some stuff and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember when we went to some baseball games and you got to ride on my lap with me too sometimes when your legs were tired? You could ride on the scooter?
Yeah.
That was kind of fun. Yeah. And I know one thing that you're really, really good at too is helping me with my breathing machine. Do you remember some of the things that you do to help me with that?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about them?
Like, I can turn it on and you can try to fix it, but I can try to do that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are great. And then when I clean my machine, you're a really good helper too. You get to bring me my tubes and help with the soap and put things on the counter, huh?
Yeah.
Well, buddy, I really love you and I'm thankful for you. I appreciate you coming on to share some of your thoughts about it. Is there anything else that you want to tell anybody?
No.
No, you're good?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
You're the best. I'll see you in the hallway. I love you.
It's a lot to process for this dad. Now, it's certainly not the first conversation I've had like this with my children, and it won't be the last. Yet every time, it's just so emotional for me. One thing that helps me is this quote from Michael J. Fox in his book, No Time Like the Future, which for me as a parent dealing with a rare disease was such a wonderful read, and I'd highly recommend it. He said, "The mistake I make at times is to assume that my kids are looking at what I can't do and not at what I can do. They see through the disease and they see their dad." Now, it's difficult for me and for my kids when we can't do things together, like, you know, running the bases or keeping the foot on the gas for an entire day jam-packed with activities, or even playing hopscotch, which, to be fair, I'm not sure I was ever that good at that anyways, but no one needs to know about it. All that considered, I'm thankful to be here, joining in with my kids when I can, watching them do things even when I can't, and having discussions about it along the way. And ultimately, I need to remember that they do see through the disease and they see their dad.